A medical expert recently said that listening to the Ron Van Dam Show can improve your IQ. Okay, her area of expertise is toe fungus, and she said it in a bar, drunk, to Ron. But still, a medical expert said so. You and your toe fungus are listening to the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you, thank you.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I don't know what I'm thanking you for, but thank you anyway. Please keep your applause down to a minimum. I'm getting too old to appreciate this. Nonetheless, continue with the accolades, the gifts, and the presents. I do appreciate those. Like an old tub of cream cheese, I'm spreading the love. So let's do a group hug. That's ridiculous. Why would you want to do that? It's a radio show. I don't even like you getting close to the speaker. I think that's a little much. But I do spread love, and I've been quarantined as a result, but I spread it. I spread the love. I spread it. I'm spreading right now. That just sounded wrong. I don't know how else to put it. All right, that's enough. That's enough theme music. Welcome to the program. Boy, do I have a show for you today. Rhetorical question. I do. I actually do have a show for you today. It's an incredible one. We're all familiar with the television PBS series Sesame Street. If you don't know what Sesame Street is, I don't know what planet you could possibly live on other, because this is, everybody knows Sesame Street. I could name the characters, only I can't. Big Bird, Bert and Ernie, Kermit, was Kermit on Sesame Street? I don't even know who I'm talking about. Yogi Bear, Daffy Duck. No, I think now I'm getting it all wrong. Anyway, Sesame Street, a big deal. I guess at one point they decided to take Sesame Street on the road and do a production in Moscow, not Moscow, Texas. I don't even know if there's a Moscow, Texas, but there probably is. But in Moscow, the Russian thing. And one would think, oh, that's an interesting cultural idea, trading cultures and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Well, it didn't work out too well, apparently, because it was Russia and things are different there. And a rude awakening, I believe, occurred to the Sesame Street production group. So my guest today is one of the television producers of Sesame Street who took the show on a limited basis to Russia and found out that may not have been a great idea. You'll see what I mean. I think you can only imagine. And that's coming up on today's program. In the meantime, I hope that you're doing well. My hopes don't mean anything, to be honest with you, but it's a nice thing to say, so I do say them. I wish you well. My wishes never come true, ever, so that doesn't mean much of anything, but again, it sounds like really cool. So, can I tell you? All right, the guests will join us momentarily, but first, let me ask you, if you don't want to drive too far and you want some entertainment or some good food, there's probably a bar right down the street. Not too far to walk. Check it out.
Looking to try somewhere new for dinner tonight? Come to that bar near your house with a new chef out on work release, ready to tempt your taste buds with delicious specials. Start off with deep-fried meat and cheese things, crispy on the outside and nearly warm on the inside, with a house-made dipping sauce that's almost certainly just mayonnaise and ketchup. How about a pepperoni pizza served hot and fresh out of the supermarket? Or the big quarter-pound hamburger cooked just the way you like it, as long as the way you like it is well done or inedibly raw? Order a local craft beer from a wide selection that includes IPAs. IPAs, and of course, IPAs. And when you're ready for dessert, the bartender can point you to some place that actually does that kind of thing. Ready for dinner? Head to that bar near your house. Not too far to drive, just a little too far to walk. We'll see you there. Looking to have a few laughs this weekend? Come to Comedy Night at that bar near your house. Hosted by that local comic who hasn't moved past open mic nights for 20 years. And featuring that guy who told everyone he was moving to Los Angeles to become a famous comic and was back in 3 months. That girl whose friends all say she's really funny. And your headliner, that guy who was nearly famous until it turned out he liked to send pictures of his penis to strangers. It's a night full of fun and laughs, and it's happening at that bar near your house. Not too far to drive, just a little too far to walk. We'll see you there.
Natasha Lance Rogoff joins us now. She's the author of Muppets in Moscow. This is a crazy story. It's the unexpected crazy true story of making Sesame Street in Russia. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
This is fascinating. How long ago did this occur?
Almost 30 years. Ooh. I mean, it's kind of amazing to write a memoir, but to have materials from that long ago, I carried boxes around for 30 years.
Yeah, wow. This is fascinating. I guess I've got to ask, how did this ever come about that Sesame Street would be altered and produced for Russia?
Well, it was after the fall of the Soviet Empire, mm-hmm. After 1991, and the whole Western world at that time was euphoric, mm-hmm. about the collapse of communism.
Right.
And actually, then Senator Biden spearheaded congressional approval for a Russian version of Sesame Street. And the idea was that the Muppets would be, the ideal ambassadors to, mm-hmm. teach idealistic values, tolerance, inclusivity, and also give children the skills they needed to survive in this, new open society with, yeah. greater freedom of expression and a free market. So that's how it all started. I was tapped to do, mm-hmm. the show. After, I think, in 1992.
Were you producing for Sesame Street in the States at the time?
No.
No?
No, oh, no. Oh. I was not a children's television producer.
Oh.
I had been making documentaries, uh-huh. in what was then the Soviet Union.
Right.
Mostly about underground culture.
Wow.
And embedded with, the conservative fascist communists who did not want to see their country overthrown.
Right.
They were on the far right side of politics in, wow. The Soviet, post-Soviet society. At that time. So I had been doing very serious documentaries for PBS. So no children's TV experience at the,
yeah.
time.
But I guess they thought that you were familiar with the geography and the geopolitical situations, and you had relationships with people there already?
I was working with a lot of TV producers over there, mm-hmm. mostly film people in film.
Right.
Because television wasn't as sophisticated,
right.
in
or
Russia
allowed.
At that time,
yeah. Yeah.
as it was. Well, there really wasn't that much. There was, there wasn't a lot of dramatic episodic TV.
Right. Right.
And so, when Sesame Street approached me and we were going to do 52 half hours,
mm-hmm.
That had never been done in Russia before, in the Soviet Union. They had, I think, the longest number of episodes that were ever produced before our show was 12.
Wow.
So it was really like a moonshot.
Yeah.
To do this. But fascinating. I mean, the idea, you know, when they came to me and asked, I was just like, you know, did you just watch my film, my very serious, dark film? You know, so the exact opposite of the lighthearted, you know, sweet Muppets. But they were, it was incredible what they were doing. I mean, Sesame Street at that time, it's, you know, it's a nonprofit.
Right.
And they had programs in a lot of different countries, but mostly in Western Europe and in Mexico, in Latin America.
Uh-huh.
But this was a bit of a stretch because obviously we weren't doing it with the national broadcaster, because the country was really just in a state of complete collapse at that time.
Yeah, that's the interesting part, because one would think that at this point you can walk into Russia and it's a different place. But from what I've read here, this was not a cakewalk. This was not a celebration. This was like dangerous stuff, even though that change had taken place.
Yeah, I mean, it was more dangerous than I had anticipated when I went over there, because I had been there before and I speak Russian. And so, you know, I thought, how difficult could it be, you know, bring the Muppets to Moscow? This will be easier than making a documentary. Yeah. And, you know, this will be I need the break. You know, I need something that'll be more fun and positive
and happy,
you know, something with purpose.
Right.
That I mean not that the documentaries don't have purpose, but just something for children. It felt right.
Sure.
But it, you know, in the first year, you know, our first sponsor was nearly killed in a car bombing.
Whoa.
And you know, I had been in that car 3 weeks before the 3 weeks before the bombing.
Wow.
So you know, this was pretty shocking. And then it got worse, because the broadcast partner that we had, you know, who was our confidant in the beginning and then joined us and then, you know, agreed to air the show in principle, as they say in Russian.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he was a great man trying to bring press freedom to Russia in the 1990s and fight corruption inside the TV station. This is Vlad Listyev, and he was just gunned down, you know, when he left
assassinated.
The TV station. Yeah.
Wow.
So
okay.
This happened again too. Like there was another one that we then worked with another broadcast partner, and that person was also assassinated.
Oh,
so it was a surreal story, you know, this juxtaposition of a trying to make a puppet show in a, you know, post-communist country, and then the violence, the chaos, you know, the extreme poverty that a lot of people were experiencing.
Yeah.
And this is the same narrative, actually, that Putin uses again and again about this period to justify his authoritarianism.
Yeah. And then I understand that your production office was actually raided by soldiers?
Yes. Yes, and they this was inside Russia's largest television station, and we had an office on the executive floor, which had been given to us by someone who I knew very well, who donated the office, which is why we were on that floor. And that entire floor was taken over by soldiers with AK-47s, and my team was, you know, they were inside, they had all the scripts, our computer equipment, everything was there, including our mascot, which was, you know, Elmo, a life-size Elmo.
Mm-hmm.
And the soldiers even seized the Muppet, took that away, put a lock on the door, and that was the last time we saw any of that.
Wow.
So we had to start from scratch again.
I'm surprised you even stayed there at that point.
Yeah, well, my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, was also very surprised and begging me, you know, to back out. And, you know, it was incredible the things that were happening. It was so surreal that it was almost like, you know, watching a car wreck. And you couldn't leave. You know, I'm just like, you know, rubbernecking past it, but at the same time, you know, being in it. And
unbelievable.
It was also, but you know, you have to look at even what's happening today in with Russia and with Ukraine. And, you know, after the Soviet Union collapsed, there was this real sense of hope that, you know, maybe this could make a difference. Maybe, you know, this was a way, our small way of, you know, helping Russia to transition to a more open society, to join the free world.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine today what that felt like 30 years ago, that people, everybody in the Western world for the most part thought, wow, this is amazing. This is a historical transition after 70 years of communism. It's really possible and I can be part of it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what it was. It was you know, an amazing experience. And we had over 400 Moscow artists represented from all places all over the former Soviet Union, from Ukraine, Armenia, Georgia, the animators, a ton of animators from Georgia especially. And this entire team worked together with the American team. And, you know, it became a huge hit. It was on Russia's two top TV stations, and it ran for 10 years, you know, well into Putin's era. Yeah. So if you meet Russians now, like on the street, many of them have been fleeing from our team because they had been speaking out against the war.
Right.
And they will tell you, you know, they grew up on Sesame Street. They'll start singing songs from the song, from the show, the same way we do, you know, in the U.S.
Wow. So you really did make the impact. It was worth it.
I'd say it had a tremendous impact. Yeah. It was a huge hit. But the one thing I was thinking about, I woke up at 4 a.m. mm-hmm. and realized that the young people that are leaving Russia now, because they don't want to fight and going over the borders as the borders are still open.
Yes.
They're in their late 20s and early 30s. So they grew up watching Ulitsa Sazam.
Huh.
Yeah.
So, but a different kind of impact than was.
But also, it's a different kind of impact. But also the Ukrainians on the other side that are the same age cohort, they also are the Ulitsa Sazam generation.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. You say, what was the impact? You know, in terms of numbers and the show's reach across 11 time zones, you know, 1/7 of the world's surface, it was huge.
Yeah. Greater than even.
Yeah. But it's heartbreaking to see what's happening now. Absolutely. To see where we were 30 years ago and where we are today.
Yeah. Well, that's the cycle of life as far as that thing's concerned, I guess.
Very sad cycle.
As interesting as this is, did you learn anything about the culture, any lighthearted parts of the book?
Oh, the book is actually really funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that sounds, you know, incredible, but with all the, you know, the violence that was going on. But the book is very, very funny. I mean, the Russian team, the Moscow team, there were all kinds of people there, but they didn't want our Muppets in the beginning and, mm-hmm. you know, wanted instead their traditional hardwood Muppets, you know, and reminded us that they had a tradition dating back to the 16th century.
Yeah.
And then with the meeting with their puppet maker, their top puppet maker, he pulls two puppets out of a sack and, you know, they immediately start hitting each other. You know, I'm going to kill you, he says.
Oh my God.
And then I'm looking at that and that was like, you know, everybody's laughing and I'm like, okay, this puppet on puppet violence is very Sesame Street.
It's like a Nightmare Punch and Judy.
Yeah, totally.
Wow.
But at the same time, you know, there was incredible, like the show, many of the American Sesame Street puppeteers and people who work on the U.S. show just thought this show was artistically brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it was.
Hmm.
It was so beautiful. We had people from the, you know, Russia's film industry, theater industry. We pulled in all the top people to mm-hmm. our team.
Mm-hmm.
And the puppet that was created, the new Muppets that were based on Slavic culture, were incredible. I mean, so... The first puppet that's the body, full body puppet, like Big Bird. He's larger than Big Bird, and he's a tree spirit. So kind of a blue hound-like structure, you know, hound-like puppet with pieces of moss and leaves and twigs sewn into his outer costume because he's a part of nature.
Oh.
And he lives inside a 40-foot tree.
Oh.
So, you know, there's I would say the book is very ironic and moves a lot like a thriller because of what happens. That's so unexpected.
Did Jim Henson have any part in this transformation?
Well, Jim's legacy had a great part because obviously he created the Muppets, but he had passed away.
Right. But did those people participate? His crew, his Oz, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. The Jim Henson production team built the Muppets. They were part of the design and creation team. And the designer of that particular Muppet that I described, whose name is Zeli Boba, his name is, the designer is Ed Christie. And I just saw him recently. And he talked about how he loved creating the Muppets for Ulitsa Sazam, which means Sesame Street in Russian. Because he said, you know, everybody knows what a frog looks like.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what a bird looks like.
Right.
But nobody knows what a tree spirit looks like. I thought that was wonderful.
Interesting. I see here in my notes that a lot of people in Russia do love their vodka, as they do in the country here, but probably more so there. What is it like there? Is vodka like water?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean. Like, is it drunk like water? Yes.
I see in your book that it becomes a part of everyday life and business.
Oh
itself.
My God! Yeah. It was definitely a part of the meetings everywhere. And you know, in most cases, I was the only woman in, you know, I'd say 99.9% of my meetings trying to raise funds for the show.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of drinking, and I think that, you know, at some point during the course of the story, I become pregnant, and so I got out of drinking, you know, later on in the show, which was a great relief. But yeah, it's hard to keep up.
A lot of peer pressure, yeah. This is one of the most fascinating subject matters I've interviewed in quite some time. I've got to tell you, Natasha, and this book is amazing.
Thank you.
No, it's true.
Thank you so much.
What are you working on these days? Are you working on anything else now?
Well, the book just came out. Mm-hmm. It's only been 5 weeks, and I did a book tour around the country, which was, you know, fascinating to see all the people who resonated with the story. And the book has become a bestseller. And so I've been doing a lot of talks. You know, particularly because of the time right now, there's extreme, you know, interest in Russia, in what's going to happen, and how did we get here? Which, you know, the challenges that we had in making the puppet show, in making Sesame Street, reveal a lot about the culture. They reveal a lot about the, you know, the ways in which we're different from Russia as well as the same. But I think that it's, you know, what I'm hearing from readers is it's an incredibly deep dive into the culture in a way that's really unusual and fresh because you're doing it through the story of the Muppets.
Yeah, I've got to tell you. And this is just between the two of us, even though everybody's listening. if there was a movie that depicted this slice of life, this effort that took place, I think it'd fill a theater up to the ceiling. I mean, what would be more of a draw than this? I don't know if it's been discussed or what.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Oh,
and I mean, as I was writing it, I mean, I am a filmmaker first and an author second. And I was very aware of that, you know, how cinematic the story was. I was even aware of that, as was everybody else, mm-hmm. as we were living it.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us inside the story felt like we were in a movie, you know, as things were happening, because it was surreal. I mean, can you imagine you're trying to make a children's television show, an educational television show, and you work for a nonprofit, and yet, you know, all these people are getting assassinated around you.
I mean, it's the perfect motion picture. And on top of that, the Muppets drawn into everybody's life who's alive now. So, I mean, man, what could be a better deal?
They're part of our family.
Yeah, it's not like there's no connection here. There's a strong connection. So anyway, I look forward to seeing it in the theaters.
Me too.
Yes. Well, you can make it happen. Okay. Where the book's available everywhere, obviously.
Everywhere, yeah.
Okay.
And at your indie bookstores, especially.
Yes. So. It's Muppets in Moscow, The Unexpected Crazy True Story of Making Sesame Street in Russia. But Muppets in Moscow probably do it if you're searching for it. Is there a website where people can follow you or whatever?
Yes, it's just my name, NatashaLanceRogoff.com.
Mm-hmm. It's a cool name, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Pleasure speaking to you. Continued success. And I got to tell you, I'm looking forward to more from you.
Pleasure talking with you very much.
Okay. That was fascinating. Scary fascinating. It's always interesting to hear what goes on behind the scenes, what goes on behind closed doors. I think that was a song. I don't know who sang it, but there's really no reason to know that. But it was interesting nonetheless. Yeah. Well, the only thing I have to do after the program's over, to be honest with you, is I have to feed the birds. Ron, you have birds in your house? No. Not unless one of them gets in here by mistake. No, I have a bird feeder in the back of my house, just down the street from the bar. there's a bird feeder there, and my significant other, lovely lady, loves to feed the birds, only I'm the one that does it. She doesn't get her little hands dirty with bird seed, and the bag's very heavy. That's the excuse we've come up with. So I have to feed the birds. And not only do I put bird seed in this bird seed tubular contraption, but we also have a little basket that hangs next to that where I put suet. I have no idea what suet is actually comprised of, but it's nothing good. It's greasy as hell. And it's like a cake of grease. It's like someone went hog wild sculpturing Crisco. It's just weird stuff. But birds love it. Whatever. You know, if birds like it, I guess it's good. I don't know. It's for wild birds, too. These are birds that are out all night partying. We have cardinals in the backyard because there's a church nearby. And we have woodpeckers who are pecking wood. And I call them the peckers, and my neighbors don't understand quite what I'm talking about. There are little chickadees, I think, but they're not chickens. They're types of birds. We have hummingbirds. You do? They don't look like birds. They look like insects, and they're really strung out. They're like Robin Williams, rest his soul. They're amazing. So I have all these wild creatures, and then the squirrels come around. They're just nuts about the bird feeder. There's a little joke in there. I hope you got it. And little chipmunks sometimes, annoying little bastards. And okay, blue jays. Oh, those are some big birds. They're kind of even blue. And it's fascinating. Sometimes I'll just sit near the window and watch the birds fly into it. Not the bird feeder, the window. It's kind of sad in a way, and in another way, entertaining. No, that's not true. I started to get into the birds, in a sense, because they are interesting. It's amazing. I think they're the closest animal we have to dinosaurs. That's what I'm told. I was thinking that lizards might be the closest thing to dinosaurs, but I guess not. I guess it's birds. So that's kind of amazing. But I do feed them. I breastfeed them, as a matter of fact. I have peck marks all over my chest. No, I don't breastfeed them. What are you kidding me? Stop it. You're not that gullible, are you? Seriously, I know you believe things I say, but come on. Stop believing everything everybody says. You're going to go nowhere with that. That's called a cult, and I think we're all witnessing one already developed, but that's besides the point. Yeah, you know, don't believe everything that everybody tells you. I don't know how I got onto that subject, but it's because I told you I breastfeeded birds, and you know that's not true. You know it's not true. You know I wouldn't do something like that. I wouldn't do that. So I got to do that. I got to lift the bag. The bag's pretty heavy. It's like 30 pounds. That's a lot. That's a lot for a guy like me who doesn't like to lift. I even find walking to be very difficult because I have to lift my foot up a little bit. It's not easy, man. It's not easy. And I'm not talking about because I'm getting old. This is like since I was 5. I thought walking was just a real, like, oh, come on. Like, isn't there another mode of transportation besides my feet? And apparently there is. And I do drive. I do drive. When I was a kid, I had a bicycle. And I used to bicycle all over the town. And I loved it. I would go fast and I would go slow. And I thought, well, someday I'll be able to drive a car. And then I did. And then I got into an auto accident. And I figured, okay, this has gone way too far. And there went that dream. Oh, man. The only thing I didn't like about bicycles, I don't know how I got on this subject. I think you steered me there. The only thing I didn't like about bicycles is the bicycle seat. They are so small. What is with that? I don't know who's doing this, Schwinn or I don't know the makes of bicycles because I don't ride them anymore because of those damn seats. It's like they're saying, I'm going to give you colonoscopy, but not really, just enough so it hurts toward the beginning part. Those seats are just too small. I mean, my rear end is really, and I don't have a big one. But the seat's just too small for a human being. Maybe a bird. Maybe a bird could ride a bicycle. I don't know if that would work. Anyway. All right. I'm running out of time, and you're running out of patience, I can tell. But here's what's going to happen now. I'm going to end this program, or this particular episode at least. Which was, that was fascinating subject matter. I mean, I couldn't make that up. That was like, wow, that's scary stuff. Anyway, I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. We'll have a different guest. I'll talk about different stuff. I might even use a different language. I don't even know. I don't know a lot of languages. I know a little bit of French, just enough to get me through. Oh, let's say French class. I don't know a lot of words. I'll tell you right now what I know, what I don't know. I don't know a lot. I know bibliothèque is the library, is it? Or is that school? I don't even know. Au revoir is goodbye. Bonjour is hello. Je m'appelle, my name is. And then you throw your name in after that to make it a full sentence. I know that. I know some other words, just can't remember them right now. Because they never came into play. I've never been to France that I recall. I could have been there, but I don't recall it. Other than that, there'd be no purpose. I did, there was a lovely French student that stayed in our home for a while on an educational exchange program. Very, very nice person. We still keep in touch with her. She spoke French, but she was trying to speak English. So she said, no, speak English. I'm trying to learn English. So, you know, I didn't even speak French then. There's really no reason that I went through. I think I took French in high school, I think, for 3 years. And there's no point. There was just no point to it. All right, kids, I'm out of time. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program, as I said previously. And in the meantime, make it a great day, and I wish you peace.